broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Cosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use continues. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for January 7th in the year of our Lord, 2015. It is our 2 at 2, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country. On your radio, in the traditions of our founders, the checks and balances put in place by our brilliant founders, inspired by the Almighty, are the solution to restore the Republic and to use the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America, as intended, the rule of law. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a road to hoe, but revolution is not the answer. Restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth is the answer. Kirk Cosby's with me. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
We spent last hour talking about Republicans. Fail again. Boehner, elected as Speaker of the House. But is a failure or a success? And the simple answer is it depends on what we do with it, ladies and gentlemen. I submit to you that persistence and consistency are the keys to the exercise. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, the Republicans do have 246 members in the House and 54 seats in the Senate now. Remember that it only takes 218 votes in the House, far short of the 246 without a single Democrat, to defund anything. And remember, they just put a rule change through the House yesterday. I think it was a three-pointer while they weren't looking. Rule change in the House. The House recalculates price of bills. Barack says he's not going to sign the Keystone Pipeline. Senate's going to vote on it on Friday. If they pass it in both houses, they'll certainly put Barack on the defensive, which is what we need, and they'll certainly make him expend a lot of political capital on that issue alone. If he doubles down and digs in his heels, he'll look very foolish indeed. The do-nothing Congress might turn into the do-nothing president. 9 earthquakes rocked Texas in a single day, 3 of them over 3.0. Yeah, serious business, ladies and gentlemen. All right, that's a recap. We're going to drill into this Boehner thing more. Dr. Michael Kaufman's in the house. Welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir, and Happy New Year to the Michael Kaufman family.
Yeah, well, thank you, Sam, and the same to you guys as well, and to the listening audience. I hope 2015 turns out to be better than 2014. It seems to have gotten off to a rocky start, but I agree with you, Sam. Sometimes we get too focused on our principles, and we shoot ourselves in the foot in the process. And it really depends upon what we do with it from now on.
And it's not because the principles aren't right. It's because sometimes, yes, as Kurt wisely says, I need patience and I want it now.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a very good analogy, because right now we're facing a situation where actual politics has to be playing a role. I hate politics, but politics has to be playing a role, and you've got to play it in a way that's going to give you an advantage. And if we had stonewalled all those things back in late December and stood on principle, I think we'd have been in a far worse position than we're in right now. Even though everything looks like the Republicans are failing, the bombers are failing us, and all the rest. In some ways he is, but I'm waiting to see if he has a strategy behind what he did in December.
And I used the light bulb and how many failures it took before success on the light bulb happened, and then I used me dating hundreds and hundreds of women to find my wife, and now I got a lovely wife and 8 children, and most of the dates I went on turned out to be a failure, didn't they? But yet I'm happily married, and it's a wonderful thing, and that's success.
Yes, it is.
And I mentioned that in light of this scenario. You know what? We lost again. However, and this is the point, we had double the support to oust the speaker than we had last time. And you know what? If we use that support to gain even more ground and stand together, when it becomes closer battles, we just might win some of them. Kurt's got details of exactly the breakdown of what happened to John Boehner. We're going to get a list of the Republicans who voted against John Boehner for Speaker. And the point is, we need to learn their names. Those are our heroes coming up. Kurt.
Yeah, now one guy that shows up here, is Mr. Webster that I didn't even know was around. But anyway, here's the full list in order. Number one, Representative Justin Amash, Michigan.
No surprise, one of our friends.
Yeah, he tells who he voted for as well.
Who did he vote for?
Number two, he voted for Jim Jordan, Republican of Ohio.
Okay.
Another Ohioan. Then number two, Representative Brian Babin of Texas. He just voted present. Number three, Representative Rod Blum of Iowa. He voted for Dan Webster, Republican of Florida, who, by the way, ended up getting about 12 of the whole votes. Number four, Representative Dave Bratt, Virginia. He voted for Jeff Duncan.
By the way, Dave Bratt's the new guy that just got elected, right?
I think so.
Isn't the
one
that
beat Cantor.
Yes,
right?
Sir. Roger that. I think so. Yep.
Anyway, then
he's
number
not really
five,
rat,
Representative.
He's a pretty nice guy from what I hear.
Representative Jim Bridenstine of Oklahoma. He voted for Gohmert of Texas. Representative number six is Kurt Clausen of Florida. He voted for Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky. Now, it's interesting to me, Rand, of course, is in the Senate, but I was reading further down there the House Majority Leader, the Speaker of the House, doesn't have to be a member of the House. So I guess.
Well, then I'm voting for Kurt Crosby.
Okay. Number seven, Representative Scott DeJarlay from Tennessee voted for Jordan. That's the Jim Jordan of Ohio. Then you've got Representative, it just says Duncan, I think. I suppose that means Duncan Hunter, you know, or I can't remember, but, you know, to me, they need more detail on that one. It says Duncan. Representative Trey Gowdy, Republican of South Carolina, is who he voted for. Number nine, Representative Scott Garrett, New Jersey, voted for Webster, the Floridian. Representative Chris Gibson of New York, then he voted for House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California. Paul Gozer, remember him, Sam?
Yep.
Arizona,
our good friend up there. Yep.
Yeah. He voted for Webster.
We sat in Gozer's office just the other day, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we sat in Salmon's office with
Gozer.
Well,
okay,
right?
That's right. All right, yep.
Anyway, Mr. Gohmert, then he voted for Gohmert. Representative Tim Hulskamp of Kansas voted for Webster. Representative Walter Jones, another one of your buddies, Sam, from North Carolina, voted for Webster.
And we sat in Webster's office, Kurt. Jones's office. I'm all mixed up in the offices.
Yeah.
We sat
in Walter Jones's office,
Walter Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent time with us. Nice gentleman.
Yeah. Then you've got Representative Steve King. He voted for Webster. Number 16, Representative Tom Massey from Kentucky voted for Ted Yoho, Republican of Florida. Number 17, Representative Mark Meadows of North Carolina voted for Webster. 18, Representative Rich Nugent of Florida voted for Webster. Is that Ted's brother? Anyway, number 19, Representative
What's Webster's Gary first
Palmer.
Name, Kurt, do you know?
Daniel. Is his first
for
name.
Reals?
Yeah, it's really kind of interesting. Daniel right. Webster. By the way, the John Birch Society though say that he got about 62, which is higher than Boehner and lower than Gohmert,
by
which
quite
is,
a bit.
Way less than the real Daniel Webster probably would have gotten though. Then you've got we did Palmer. Okay, Representative Bill Posey of Florida. I voted for Webster. Representative Scott Riggle of Virginia voted for Webster. Representative Marlon Stutzman of Indiana voted for Webster. Representative Randy Weber of Texas voted for Gohmert. Number 24 is Webster, who voted for Webster. And number 25, Yoho, is who voted for Yoho. So anyway, those are your totals there.
It's interesting why some of our buddies would vote for Webster over Gohmert, though. I wonder if it's just an idea that they thought he might have a better chance to win. I don't know. We'll have to ask him.
Well, they say he was that this Webster guy, was more of a friend to Boehner. So what I wonder, because, you know, to me it was a real late entry. So what I wonder if what really went on there was a, you know, since Boehner saw the writing on the wall, then he worked with his buddy to say, hey, you know, you come in there and that'll take the steam out of the other guys and ensure that I get in there.
Yeah, but and it's sad to say some of our buddies might have fallen for that opinion. Then, too, because look what happened. Nevertheless, even if you take these 25 people that voted for somebody different other than Boehner, the fact is there's not even close to enough votes to really get it done, right, Kurt?
Well, that's correct. They said that they needed about 29, according to Gohmert, to basically get past the first round, and then
that would be 29 you know, to an individual candidate, right?
That's
challenger,
right. And well, 29 to not go to Boehner to make it, so that then they'd have to talk about it on.
All right. So it was,
you know,
four votes
ballots.
Off.
Yeah,
and right, then they'd go to the second round of balloting and all that kind
that's
of garbage.
Right.
But the bottom line is this, folks: we had double the support before. The fact is now Boehner is belligerently punishing folks, right, Kurt?
Well, it all depends on how you define belligerently, but, you know, the at least
in my opinion, to punish somebody for voting their conscience, it just shows why he shouldn't be Speaker, Kurt. It's abuse of power.
Yeah.
Yes, that's been my biggest concern all along, because if Boehner starts punishing those who oppose him, then we've lost before we even started. And it is a very serious issue that we hopefully can get around and not have happen. But every evidence so far suggests that he's going to punish these people. And that's the last thing that we should do. We should be showing unity.
Yeah, it looked like, according to one report, that he, you know, punished Mr. Webster for his disloyalty. He decided to strip him of his seat on the powerful Rules Committee, according to a top Republican.
And, you know, you mentioned that Webster was Boehner's friend, and now Boehner's going to punish Webster. To some degree, that maybe that's the reason they voted for him, just basically to create a greater split.
Yeah, maybe so. And it was interesting to me to see a report from the congressman that we sat in his office, you know, you sat basically almost knee-to-knee with him, Sam.
Yes, sir.
A few weeks back, Representative Matt Salmon, Sheriff Mack, and, you know, we had, two other congressmen were right in that room with us. And he said, Matt Salmon said, I had a real internal struggle on my vote today. He said, if there was a legitimate opportunity to vote for someone else that could become Speaker, then it's a different story. But it was clear once the voting had materialized that he was going to be the Speaker. Anyway, just interesting.
Yeah, and it's hard to know what to say there. On one hand, you could say, well, buddy, you should still stick to your guns, Matt. On the other hand, Matt's saying, hey, you know, what's the best thing to do once I see the writing on the wall? And now... you know, understand that even the 29 votes wouldn't have guaranteed any victory. It just would have forced another round of voting kind of a thing. And, you know, maybe more would have jumped the board, but maybe the slapdown would have been even harder. It's hard to say. In other words, I know from experience the outside view is sure easy to armchair quarterback that stuff. But the fact is we didn't win there. But here's the question to you now, Michael Kaufman. I don't see a single agenda item that the Republicans really have laid out. And I've watched them for 2 months. Since they've taken majority of both the House and the Senate. And you know what? I would think they would have been planning for this since the last election, 2012.
Yes.
But they don't have a single agenda item that's been articulated clearly to me. And I'm in the media. I watch it every day. I'm a news hound and I'm a news commentator. I mean, if somebody would know, it would be guys like me or you or Kurt or somebody. And I don't see a single agenda item that I can say has traction that I could support them on. Do you?
I know. It's a very, no, I haven't seen it either. It's very discouraging, but I hold out this candle, and that's all it is a candle of hope, that perhaps that's part of the overall strategy is not to show your cards before you actually need to do it. And if that's the case, then I'll forgive them. But if it's not, if we're really seeing a Republican Party that is still just drifting along, yes, we'll tackle Obamacare, and yes, the Keystone Pipeline and the rest, but there is nothing really to get at the heart of what this nation needs, and that it should be something that the Republican Party would be a natural to develop. And I'm just hoping that as part of the strategy, not to, to tip their cards and show them before they're ready to move on it.
Isn't it Living on a Prayer that's Bon Jovi's tune? Just kind of wondering.
Yeah.
I think it's Bon Jovi Living on a Prayer. I'm just saying that kind of seems to me like what we're doing at this point. They better have a plan. And they certainly haven't decided to share it with me, but I'm telling you, they better have a rock-solid plan to get this done. They better have serious initiatives. And I'm not talking about approving the oil pipeline. Don't get me wrong. That's good news. I think it should be approved. However, whether we approve that or not, it's inconsequential. It's a tiny issue.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. It's the key of energy policy. But
tiny issue.
It's a key energy policy, but it's not going to make or break the country. It's not going to get us out of our debt. It's not going to shut down bureaucrats and the move towards socialism in any way. So it's nothing substantial. Do they have a single substantial item on the table? I don't see one.
I don't see one either. And that's, I find that very disturbing, unless it's part of the strategy, like I said before. If it's part of the strategy, then I'll forgive them for not really developing it. But they've had at least 4 months to start preparing this. In fact, they should have been doing it for the last 2 years, preparing what they're going to do. I mean, it's just to come up to the situation and say, oh, now what should I do, is a little late, a dollar short, and very destructive. I'm praying that that's not what they're doing. I'm praying that they have been strategizing and have a well-laid-out and oiled plan to gradually come out, you know, not all at once, but over the next year, and just level the stuff at Obama that just, it makes sense. It will restore the economy, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, begin to reestablish the constitutional principles. All these things will be coming out over the next year. And for legislation, now Obama will veto most of them, if not all of them. But at least it will show how obstructionist he is and how arrogant and how much he's off into the left field of the universe is something we definitely need to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're seeing more and more of Americans realizing what we're up against. They are entrenched to the point where even good, honest Americans cannot unseat them, cannot challenge them. And what we've got to do if we're into solutions is do our very best and trust in the Almighty for the rest. I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a row to hoe. And many are saying now we can't accomplish anything in Washington. Turn your back on Washington. And although I agree that the solutions are not in Washington, to turn our back on Washington is a mistake. And I submit to you that we're going to come out swinging like never before. Okay? We're going to hold on to what we've got. Yeah, doesn't matter if we make it or not. We gotta make a difference. Our children's freedoms depend on it, right? And I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, we can make a difference. We're gonna put together a constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. We're putting together a caucus on Capitol Hill, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, we're living on a prayer, that's for sure. But I'm telling you right now, we've got to take action. So did you know that, Michael Kaufman? We're putting together a CSPOA caucus on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, I heard rumors to that effect, read a few things and so forth. That's good. I'm glad to see that happening.
All right. Well, I was talking.
It's certainly the right time to happen because, man, what's happening with our police around the country is just horrible. I don't like the militarization of the police department. I don't like some of the hires that they have of these zealot Rambo-type cops and so forth, but at the same time, most cops are there to serve us and defend us and protect us and so forth, and what's happening right now is literally disgusting.
You got that right. Well, I was on Capitol Hill. Kirk Crosby was with me. Sheriff Richard Mack was with me, several other people, and we went to several congressmen's offices and chatted with them. And one congressman proposed a CSPOA Sheriff's Caucus to me. And I took down the name, and he gave me one of his staffers, and he's going to help us organize it and get it done.
Excellent.
I really believe that those are the keys to the game. And I know at first glance you can say, Sam, there's a gazillion caucuses on Capitol Hill. You're wasting your time. Sam, but you know what? Those are the people that say, don't ask the girl out. Well, you'll never get a date, sir. I'm telling you right now that I'm going for broke, and I'm going to do everything within my power, and I just can't do anything else beyond that. But I'm going to do what I can.
Yeah, you can only do what you can do. And, you know, you got to depend upon the Lord for taking it and making something out of it. And if he has it, you know, I know what you're doing is correct. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But not everything the Lord directs us to seems to be a success when it happens. So we just have to be patient.
But now you got to debate what successful is. If you do what the Lord wants you to and he blesses you for it, even though the outcome that you intended may not be forthcoming, are you successful? And I would submit to you the answer is yes.
Yes, absolutely. Or I still wouldn't be in this business, and you probably wouldn't have been either.
I hear that. So the battle was on. It's been crazy. It'll get worse or better. It'll do both, really. And in many cases, it'll get worse, but there'll be a lot of things that are better. And the question is, which do you focus on? Yep. Do you acknowledge that it's worse in some ways? I mean, you got to have a reality check and acknowledge it. At the same time, though, you've got to focus on what you can do to make a difference. And I'm convinced, what if we in the alternative or new media, Michael Kaufman, had five times the media presence we have now? I bet you that Boehner would have lost his position.
I think he would have, too. I think the very fact that we had 25 come out in opposition to him is a very key indicator that a lot of the congressmen and politicians and so forth are beginning to see that the people are upset. And what the only thing that's preventing it right now is the mainstream media keeps saying, oh, everything's all right. Don't look there. Look over here. See, it's all ice cream and football and all the rest. We don't have to pay any attention to what the politicians are doing. And that's starting to wear thin, I think, for most Americans. They're beginning to see that there's something terribly, terribly wrong.
And I wonder how many people would have bucked the status quo had we not had the alternative media, new media, taking center stage. You know what? He who owns the media makes the rules. I'm telling you right now, if we had a bigger slice of that pie, I believe consequently we'd have a direct correlation. It would have been, instead of 25, it would have been 50 or 35, or I don't know the number exactly, but I'm just saying we would have seen a different sea change because the people... really, the majority of the time, the majority of the people choose that which is right when they get the proper info.
That's the key, is having a well-balanced knowledge of what is really going on. Because right now, I would say 60 to 70% of the American people have only one side of the issue explained to them and have no clue as to what's really going on. They're living in basic ignorance, and we're being basically deceived by the news media, and it's deliberate. I think it's very, very clear with the Cheryl Atkinson and Francis, I can't remember her first name, when the editors basically say we don't want you because you're undermining Obama. I mean, come on, right, say it. Is really disturbing to think that the American media, mainstream media, is so bought by this ideology of progressivism.
You got that right. Sam Bushman, Kurt Crosby, Dr. Michael Kaufman on your radio. And Michael's got a new book out. It's actually an updated version of a new book. We'll tell you all about it in seconds. Sam Bushman, Kurt Crosby, Michael Kaufman, urging you to go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com for solutions.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
From the days of the Romans, there have been legends of a fountain of youth, and now science has found a real answer to slowing the aging process. I'm Joyce Riley from the Power Hour, and it's so exciting to know that Time Challenger has capitalized on decades worth of international scientific studies to bring you the most powerful mitochondrial DNA supplement on the market today. Mitochondrial DNA is the power plant of human cells, but as we age, we lose more and more of this precious material. Time Challenger promotes healing and gives cells the power to do their work. Mental cognition may be enhanced, skin refreshed, blood pressure normalized, and signs of aging might be reduced. Time Challenger can also provide enhanced recovery for athletes. Time Challenger, the first step to slow the effects of aging on your body. To learn more, call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. Time Challenger just might be your fountain of youth.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
How would you like to get some of the most incredible tasting in the world, raw, nutritious, and delicious honey? All right, get a hold of Kurt. He'll make it possible. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com, or 801-669-2211. We're talking about raw honey available now. Shipped to your door. Get a hold of Kurt Crosby, raw honey. It's a sweet deal, I'm telling you right now. 801-669-2211. Just tell Kurt Sam said to get some raw honey, and I'm going to do it. All right, there you have it, Michael Kaufman, Dr. Michael Kaufman on the line with us. And we're talking about being positive. We're talking about, you know what, we've got a lot of problems, but we got to do what we can do. We got to trust in God. We can't just go negative. That isn't going to help our cause. There's no solutions in going negative. But Dr. Michael Kaufman, AmericaPlundered.com is website, AmericaPlundered.com, has an update to his new book. And this is very serious, ladies and gentlemen. This is no joke. You know, there's two sides of this issue usually, and Michael Kaufman brings a refreshing choice C to the table. One side says, man, Islam's evil everywhere. Everybody that believes in Islam is going to kill you. They're going to blow you up. They're going to murder you. They're evil. They want 1,000 virgins to sleep with in heaven, and by golly, they're going to kill you. That's the belligerent, hawkish, warmongering side of the Republicans, etc. The other side says, oh man, Islam's not a threat. Come on, you're goofy. Don't worry about it. There's no threat whatsoever. Neither A or B are the facts, ladies and gentlemen. C is the truth. C is the issue. And so Michael Kaufman's new book is called Radical Islam in the House. I'm going to say it again. Radical Islam in the House. Where do you get it? AmericaPlundered.com and on Amazon, and virtually look for it by name, Michael Kaufman, Radical Islam in the House. Now, Michael, have I articulated the reality correctly?
Yeah, very much so. There are a lot of nuances to what you said, but that's true of all aspects of life. So if you want to discuss some more, we can do that.
Yeah, I want to. Really, So here's the point. As you started to research, though, you were kind of on this idea that, oh, man, the hawkish, warmongering folks or pros that you're suggesting this threat exists, and I don't know that it exists like they claim, and so you dug into it, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. In fact, my co-author, Kate Matheson, has been actually looking, deviling in this for years, decades, and never had an opportunity to come out and say what she has found until we wrote this book. And it's a short book. It's only a little, it used to be less than 100 pages, and now it's a little bit more than 100 pages. But it's something you can sit down and read in one day, or, you know, in the evening, a couple nights or something. And it's, from what I'm getting back from comments and so forth, is that I have not gotten anything less than 5 stars on it yet. 5 out of 5.
It's a barn burner because instead of just the normal platitudes that everybody else takes and the normal stances everybody else takes, kind of talking point stuff, you've really dug in and have some unique details to bring to the table that lay out your case, right?
That's exactly right. In fact, that's a comment that almost all of the commenters made in their comments, is that never have they read such detailed accounts of what's going on in such a few pages. And it's easy to understand, and that's why we wrote it the way we did. We wanted to be able to have people read it, not just sit there on their bookshelf and gathering dust, because it's critical. I can't overemphasize how critically important this is for people, for Americans, to understand what's going on.
All right, let me just jump in hardcore. Is Barack Obama Islam in the White House incarnate?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think he's a mixture of a fascist, a communist, and Islamist. He's got a real weird worldview that is beyond anybody else for understanding. But very definitely he's favoring the Islamists. Now, why he's doing that, one can only assume it's because of his childhood experiences and so forth, but and his family back in Africa, which are all Wahhabi extremists. Wahhabi is a very, very extremist Sunni. Now, if you understand what I'm saying, there's two major groups in Islam. One is Sunni, the other one is Shia. Iran is Shia, Saudi Arabia is Sunni. The Muslim Brotherhood is Sunni.
And by the way, let me just make this clear. Nobody call me and tell me it's not exactly the way it is and try to chop it up. He's simplifying in generalizations to get people's arms around reality, okay?
Yes,
anyway,
exactly.
Continue.
Exactly, because there's a lot of details we had to leave out to do that. Obviously, it could be a book that's 3 inches thick, and there are books that are 3 inches thick out there, but you'll never get through them.
You'll never get to the important takeaways or punchlines that matter either.
Yeah, because you're overwhelmed with all the detail and so forth. And you can always look up the detail after you run across the general explanation of it in our book. It's not like you're never going to know the detail. You can find the detail if you want to after reading the summary, which is the book. It's pretty easy to find. In fact, we have many, many, 200 or so references that you can go to that have supported the documentation that we have in the book. And once you understand what is really going on, you realize the danger is really there, not only just from the extremists, but unfortunately, like you said, Sam, there is so many Muslims that want to get along with everyone else. They really do. They want to have a business. They want to have a good standard of living and all the rest. But these extremists themselves are compelling them to do kind of extremist types of things. And if this so-called Mahdi, which is really the kind of the equivalent of Jesus Christ in the Christian religion, if the Mahdi returns, all hell's going to break loose, because then the Quran tells every Muslim that they have to fight every non-Muslim. And here a Muslim who wants to just get along is sitting there and saying, you know, if I don't do this, they're going to kill me. And this is the major problem with all of what you see. That's why these people don't stand out. That's why the moderates don't voice their opinion when the extremists are doing what they're doing, because they know if they do, they could be killed themselves.
In other words, they've created a very intense, under-the-radar, diabolical battle for the hearts and minds of everyone on the face of the earth.
That's very true. This is a religious war that goes beyond any religious war we've ever had in the past. And it is imperative that you understand the dynamics of it, because your life may depend upon it. But more importantly, the life of the Muslim may depend upon it. You know, it's up to us as Christians to share the hope that's within us for Christ. the hope of love and so forth, and explain that to them. There's been a major revolution going on within the Muslim world of converting to Christianity, even though they know if they're ever found out, if they happen to live in a Muslim world or a state, that they're likely to be killed. They really are responding extremely well to the message of love that can only come through Jesus Christ. So it's a phenomenal thing, and we have a responsibility to touch their lives as best we possibly can.
We do, and here's the important takeaway in my mind, because the real battle is going to be, we've always asked this in our military, hey, when push comes to shove and the government goes against the people, which they will, they're gaining ground to do it every single day.
Yes.
Will the military go with the government against the people? Will the police officers and the sheriffs and law enforcement, will they go against the people, or will they turn and stand with the people? And really, it's been kind of a battle for the hearts and minds of the military, the hearts and minds of the law enforcement, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Now what you're going to ask is, all right, when the war comes to, and I pray that it doesn't, but I predict that it will come, because that they're hell-bent on power and control, okay, and they're evil. So when it all comes, the question becomes, the average Islam-affiliated individual, will they turn on what they know? In other words, will they say, I got to fight or I'll be killed? Or will they say, wait a minute, I've got too many friends in the Christian world. I've got too many friends in America. I've got too many neighbors. I've got too many partners in business. And where will their hearts and minds be, and what will they do? Isn't that the ultimate question?
That's exactly true, and it's one of the reasons why such a heavy burden is put on our shoulders, because we have to demonstrate that love to them. We have to, because if we don't, that's the biggest weapon we have against Islam, radical Islam, is love. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. And if you look at the Bible, what's astonishing, we talked about this a couple of years ago when we published the first book, is that the actual Quran talks about Allah as being the greatest deceiver in the world, the greatest of all deceivers. He says that 5 times in the Quran. And this is, when you really begin to do this and compare it to what the Bible says, who is the greatest deceiver in the Bible? It's the devil. It's Satan. So you're really talking about major, major differences between Judaism and Christianity and so forth and Islam.
But you are talking about theological differences. However, and here's the point. If you are kind, the natural reaction is to basically shun the Muslims, to stand away from them, to say, man, I don't want them to blow me up with their backpack, or I don't want to sit by them on a plane, or whatever. That's exactly what Satan wants. That's exactly what the mother of all religious breakdowns comes down to, the divisions. And I submit to you that if we do show them love, then those differences don't matter. And the reason they don't matter is because Jesus Christ is the author of love. So even if you have theological misunderstandings, no matter what religion you come from, the fact is, if you truly have love shown to you, meaning you've been given love, then you know how to give love back. And if that happens, we can preserve lives. And if that doesn't happen, it's a bloodbath, sir.
That's exactly the point. I don't actually say that in the book because that's pretty harsh, but I think that's exactly the choice that we have to make.
Leave it to Sam Bushman to drill the harsh in, huh?
Yeah, right.
But I'm telling you, that's the key, because look, there's a lot of people who have different theological beliefs. You and I do, for example. I don't even know what they are. I'm just telling you, I know we do. We've got to. We're humans. Here's the point, though. We do believe that love and kindness and genuine appreciation for one another and God's word is the answer. And so our theological differences can be set aside for the greater cause of we follow Christ and we want to behave as he asks us to. In other words, he's the Prince of Peace is the point. So what I'm getting at is, if we can create this relationship, build relationships of trust and love, then those differences won't matter much. Without that, though, the differences are absolutely unresolvable.
You're absolutely correct, Sam. Absolutely correct. And it's imperative that we understand that. And I do explain all of that in the book, and explain also how the Muslim Brotherhood is actually being invited into the federal administration by Obama himself. Now, Obama isn't a pure Islamist. He's not. There's no indication that that's the case. But he has melded this syncretic relationship between fascism, communism, and Islam into a worldview that he follows. And that worldview is extremely destructive. I don't need to tell anybody in the listening audience about that. I mean, you've seen that yourself. But it's extremely destructive, and part of that is the fact that he is inviting Muslims, the Muslim Brotherhood, who is an unindicted co-conspirator to the trials that went on back in the early 2000s on Islam, basically inviting them into the administration to make policy.
Not only into the administration policy. To make policy, but into leadership within the military.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And within the State Department, and you know, you can go on down the list. But there is usually a Muslim individual, key individual, in every one of those areas in our federal government that is deciding what can be allowed and what cannot be allowed. When, right after 9/11 back in 2001, there was a FBI report that had something like 132 site references back to Islam and words like that, jihad and so forth. They have managed to take out all but three of those words, and those are in very neutral situations. So you have a training manual that has no reference at all, none within the FBI, as to how Muslims actually work and so forth. And then you wonder, well, how did the FBI allow that to happen? But because they didn't know any better, because it's not in their training manual. They can't understand what's going on in the Islamic world. Right now we're having the trial of, what's his name, Chernyshnev or whatever his name is. How did that happen? It happened because the FBI was blinded. They had no knowledge of what to look for.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to point this out also, and let's be very clear, because, again, when we start to talk about Muslims and Islam and all these kind of things, you tend to paint with a very broad brush.
Yeah.
And that's the point that even though it's tempting to do, we can't. It is an absolute tiny minority of belligerent extremists that are pushing this evil agenda. The majority now are still our friends and still kind. And as you wisely pointed out, Michael Kaufman, they want a business, they want neighbors, they want friends, they want marriages, they want children, they want all that we want. However, their hearts and minds are up for grabs, if you will. And what the real key is, in the 60s, it was like, look out for the red doper diaper baby communist kind of thing. Now it's look out for the Islam. But again, it's all extremists. It's all based on this force idea, no matter what, quote, color or stripes it puts on.
Yeah.
It's force at the helm, is it not?
It's force at the helm. And that is, you know, in some ways, the progressives themselves parallel Islam extremely well. They want to use force to make change in the United States, to transform the United States. That's what's happening before our eyes right now. And it's just much more extreme when you come to radical Islam than in progressivism. And it's, there are two peas in the pod. You have to understand what's going on and how their tactics are being used in order to actually transform the United States into something totally alien to what our founding fathers had originally envisioned.
Now, the average person right now, Michael Kaufman, is saying, you know what, I know what you're saying, I don't disagree, what you say makes sense, but man, what can I do day to day? I'm on the ground, I'm Joe Blow, I live in Peoria, Illinois, or I live in whatever, something Wisconsin, or whatever, and you know, I don't have anything to do with this, Michael, come on. I mean, it's a neat expose and everything else, and I don't disagree. In fact, they've used the Christian religion, extremists have used religion and politics and gender and
sure
every fault point in the world to divide us and conquer us, and in the name of good do evil. And so what's the difference and what can I do, right?
You know, it is very interesting to really define it down to that level, Sam. I it's really amazing how we can get caught up. I can get caught up. You probably can get caught up in the emotion of what's going on if we don't sit back and look at the facts of what is really happening and how we can actually operate. And the key as far as radical Islam is concerned, really, there's two steps. One, we have to get rid of Obama out of the Oval Office. And I don't mean by assassination. I mean maybe by impeachment, whatever the case might be, because he is the guy that is causing all this to happen at the federal level. Now, the whole administration's like that, but at least if you got rid of the figurehead, it would slow it down. The next thing is that we have 2016 coming up, and we need to become like innocent as doves, but as wise as serpents, as the Bible puts it. because we need to understand who the candidates are. And right now, the progressive, it doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat, the progressives or those people of that mind are defining who gets to run for these offices through money, through a variety of other things. And we need to help people who actually have the money to sponsor these things. I think most people who sponsor these things are not necessarily evil, wanting to do bad things. They just don't know any better, and they would rather have a centrist than a right-wing conservative. And right now, the only thing that's going to save us is the conservative. The centrist is just going to allow the same things to continue to happen over and over again until we're lost. And that you need to get active in what is going on in your state at every level of government so that you can give advice to others as to who somebody truly is. I can't overemphasize that point. And we're beginning to see it in our national elections. So far, the Tea Party candidates are not doing very well, but I think eventually it will happen. In the meantime, I think the worst thing that we can do as conservatives is basically try to stand on principle for every particular issue that we have a principle for. We just can't do it. We didn't get in this mess by the progressives and the Democrats and liberals and so forth doing that. What they did is they picked issues that they wanted to force out into the forefront during the next year or two. And they focused on those, and they kind of didn't do much about all the other stuff that they would like to have, but nonetheless, the political energy that they have would not allow it. And unfortunately, we as conservatives have strong principles, and I understand that. But we have principles that are so strong that we focus on everything, and as a consequence, we accomplish nothing.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you that Michael Kaufman's correct on a political level. That's exactly what we need to work towards doing. However, I submit to you that the answers are very simple. The majority of the people choose that which is right the majority of the time when they have the facts. We need to build relationships of trust, and I submit to you the solution is simple. It's called the two great commandments. Love the Lord thy God and love thy neighbor as thyself. You put that together, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm telling you right now, there's not an evil plan on this planet that can disrupt that. And that's where we need to live our personal lives and take action. We need to fight in the public arena, though, for that which we deem to be correct and right. Kirk Cosby, Gohmert says the fight ain't over.
Well, he agrees with you, Sam, about how, the actions that were taken in Capitol Hill are just part of the battle. And that you've got to move forward from there, you've got somebody that's going right along with what you said.
Well, good for him. Also, I guess there's a time capsule buried. Maybe that has the answers to the world's problems, Kurt.
Well, it looks like Paul Revere and Sam Adams buried a time capsule, and somebody opened that sucker up. The thing had about... a number of coins in it, some pretty cool old coins and some writings. Pretty neat things. I've seen some reports about it, and they forgot to mention that Paul Revere and Sam Adams had put it together. So anyway, they got some coins.
How would you
there,
forget to mention
plaque.
Something as critical as that, Kurt? Come on.
Well, you'd hate to point out those great leaders of the past. You
know? Oh, good point. All right. I guess there's a bunch of folks killed in a magazine or a newspaper, huh, Kurt?
Well, yeah, and this kind of goes right along with Dr. Kaufman, but apparently there's this group in France where they kind of, a satirical magazine, where they do satire and that kind of stuff, and they kind of took on the whole Muhammad, that kind of thing. Well, today, some pretty good, hard-charging bad guys cruised in there and killed about 12, 12 victims. One guy, the editor-in-chief, had said this about his this attack. He says, "I don't understand how people can attack a newspaper with heavy weapons. A newspaper is not a weapon of war." I think they might not understand that.
They must not know who who owns the media makes the rules.
Yeah, just saying. Great point.
Anyway, all right, but here's the point, though. I guess these people tweeted a joke an hour before the attack, Kurt, about ISIS.
Well, you know, that and the whole, Muhammad things, there are some people that take those things pretty seriously. And a number of these people that ran this paper are now, or this magazine, are now dead. They've assumed room temperature, as Rush Limbaugh would say.
And what do they say then? They say, I guess there's a video?
Yep. You got video of it and everything. And this Mr. Holland, you know, the guy that heads up France, is going to, you know, go after him and take care of business. But I'll tell you what, those guys like that are tough to take on, I think. You know?
What's this Allahu Akbar guy, whatever?
Well, they basically screamed out something like Allah and, we've revenged Allah when they were... basically killing these people. You know, they got it on video and stuff like that. So, these guys kind of had, in satire, had taken on the whole Muhammad things and stuff. And these people, after killing all these guys, they said, we have avenged the prophet.
Yeah, it reminds me of that good old song by the Bee Gees, I Started a Joke.
Yeah.
You know what the punchline is in that? Do you know Michael Kaufman?
No,
the Bee Gees sung a song, I Started a Joke, and then it turns out the joke was on me.
Yeah, that's very true. what you're seeing in France right now is one of the reasons that the moderate Islam or moderate Muslims don't speak out. Because if they speak out, the same thing could happen to them. And we need to give them some encouragement and so forth to be able to take a stand as we're doing. You know, I wrote the book and so forth, so now I'm a target. You know, and I know that. But one of the issues that we have to face is this: if no one speaks out, they're going to take over. That's their goal. They want to have an Islamist state before Obama leaves office, period.
They're not going to get it done, sir.
No.
Because we're not going to let it. We're going to work to the best of our ability, ladies and gentlemen, to make sure that never happens. And I know it's a road to hoe. I get that. Michael Kaufman, where do people get your book, sir?
AmericaPlundered.com, or you can go to Amazon. Either look up my name, Kaufman, Kouffman, or also Radical Islam in the House.
The name of the book, ladies and gentlemen, by Dr. Kaufman, Radical Islam in the House. It's only about 100 pages. Get your copy and read it. It's essential understanding. And then move forward by keeping the two great commandments, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, might, mind, and strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself, and then go to work politically to fight for freedom. That's what Liberty Roundtable is all about. Michael Kaufman, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We can restore America. LibertyRoundtable.com. You're going to help? Thanks.